Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're honoring and recognizing and glorifying the appearance day of Srimati Rukmini Devi, the consort of Lord Dwarkadish. So, we're going to read today. Hopefully my voice can start and finish. But we're going to read a little bit from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we're going to start with a chapter called Krishna the Ranchora. Before we begin, though, I wanted to just read some really wonderful attributes of Rukmini Devi, beautiful things about her character. We should know that among all of Lord Krishna's 16,000 queens, his wives of Dwarka, Srimati Rukmini was the most beloved. In fact, it says in Skanda Purana that Rukmini in Dwarka is what Radha was or is in the forests of Vrindavan. So if you go to Vrindavan and everybody's saying, Jai Radhe. And so she was so pronounced and so loved and cherished in Vrindavan. Same way, Rukmini was loved and is loved in Dwarka. And the principal queen, she was the principal queen. And of course we know that she's also Lakshmi. And in this particular pastime, it's very beautiful because it gives a description of Krishna and, of course, him desiring Rukmini and Rukmini desiring Krishna. And what's really nice is that these are eternal consorts, and Krishna and Rukmini chose each other because of their eternal transcendental love for each other. So it's kind of nice to read about this on this particular day. In fact, there's a quote, I'll quote it here. It says this in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that it states that Rukmini speaking to Draupadi in the Bhagavatam, and she's saying, my dear Draupadi, it is my eternal desire that life after life I may be engaged in the service of Krishna, who is a reservoir of all pleasure and beauty. This is my only desire and ambition in life. So we could see that this was a transcendental, eternal pastime between Rukmini and Dwarkadish. I was thinking that how fortunate we are also here in New Dwarka that Srila Prabhupada himself established this particular worship, and no other place in ISKCON was that like that. This was the first and only place where Srila Prabhupada instituted this worship of Rukmini and Dwarkadish. And I was thinking that how fortunate we are that we're here and able to be in this particular pastime of Rukmini and Dwarkanath and Rukmini and Dwarkadish, and how Srila Prabhupada wanted this. It was his desire in that way. So I think for us here as residents of New Dwarka, it's extremely a blessing upon all of us that we can become involved in this particular pastime. I do know that when I first came to New Dwarka, and when I first saw Rukmini and Dwarkadish, it was very difficult for me to understand this particular pastime. Because when you're coming from a place like Denver, where you have Black Krishna, Govinda, and Radharani, you get so used to that. For 14 years I was in Denver. So all that time it was Radha Govinda. And it was very beautiful. And you cherish that particular pastime. And so you get used to that. And then we came here, then you see a white Krishna, and it's Dwarkadish, and that particular pastime is different. But it's the same at the same time. It's also the same. But specifically, this particular pastime is very, very beautiful, where Krishna, he after the battle of Kurukshetra, he comes to Dwarka as a great prince. And then he becomes a great king when he marries Rukmini. He becomes the king of the Yadus. So, very, very relishable. So, we'll begin like that, and I'll just pronounce some wonderful definitions or identity of Rukmini Devi. So, these are 26 qualities of Rukmini. They are Ruchi Ra Nanam, and it says, whose face is charming. Hriya Vrida, she's very shy. Sati, exalted, of saintly character. Buddhi, possessing intelligence. Lakshana, possessing auspicious bodily markings. Audarya, magnanimous. Shila, of proper behavior. Sadrishim Baryam, an ideal wife. Devim, the divine goddess. Asitapangi, dark-eyed. Mohinim, enchanting. Mahati, aristocratic. Dira, sober-minded. Kulavati, of good family. Lakshanabhigya, an expert knower of bodily symptoms. Aradito, having rendered devotional service. Matparam, Atmarpitas, dedicated exclusively to Krishna. Anavadyangim, Sobam, of faultless beauty. Sushishmita, sweetly smiling. Yararoha, of loving hips. Bimba Pala Adara, glowing bimba red lips. Shama, firm breasts. Chalantim Kalahamsa, walking with the motions of a royal swan. Submadhyamam, shapely waist. Govinda Ritamanasa, whose mind is stolen by Krishna. Gunashrayam, a repository of all other good qualities. So this is how Rukmini is being described. So we'll begin with this particular chapter. It's kind of lengthy. We might be here for a little bit, but you know, not much longer than normal. But we should be done before, or at least by 8:30, so breakfast will be at the same time. But you're going to put that up on the screen, Archita? Okay, I'm going to start now. I might skip a little things here or there because of time factor, especially when we get to the end. But we'll start here. In this particular chapter, it's a continuation of the previous one where Muchukunda was sleeping and Krishna awoke him. So it starts here on that principle. When Muchukunda, the celebrated descendant of the Ikshvaku dynasty, was favored by Lord Krishna, he circumambulated the Lord within the cave and then came out. On coming out of the cave, Muchukunda saw that the human species had surprisingly been reduced in stature to pygmy size. Similarly, the trees had also been far reduced in size, and Muchukunda could immediately understand that the current age was Kali Yuga. Now, Muchukunda was sleeping for quite a while. Not sure how long, but it was probably for thousands of years. And when he awoke, this is what he saw. Therefore, without diverting his attention, he began to travel north. Eventually, he reached the mountain known as Gandhamadana, where there were many trees such as sandalwood and other flowering trees, whose fragrance made anyone who reached them joyful. He decided to remain in that Gandhamadana mountain region to execute austerities and penances for the rest of his life. It appears that this place is situated in the northernmost part of the Himalayan mountains, where the abode of Narayan is situated. This place is still existing and it's called Bhadrik Ashram. In Bhadrik Ashram, he engaged himself in the worship of Lord Krishna, tolerating all kinds of pains and pleasures and the other dualities of this material world. Lord Krishna returned to the vicinity of Mathura, where he fought with the soldiers of Kalayavana and killed them one after another. After this, he collected all the booty from the dead bodies, and under his direction, it was loaded on bullock carts and brought back to Dwarka. Meanwhile, Jarasandha again attacked Mathura, this time with bigger divisions of soldiers numbering 23 Akshohinis. Lord Sri Krishna wanted to save Mathura from the 18th attack of the great military divisions of King Jarasandha. To prevent further killing of soldiers and to attend to other important business, Lord Krishna left the battlefield without fighting. Actually, he was not at all afraid, but he pretended to be an ordinary human being, frightened by the immense quantity of soldiers and resources of Jarasandha. Without any weapons, Krishna left the battlefield. Although his lotus feet were as soft as the petals of a lotus flower, he proceeded for a very long distance on foot. This time, Jarasandha thought that Krishna and Balaram were very much afraid of his military strength and were fleeing the battlefield. He followed them with all his chariots, horses, and infantry. He thought Krishna and Balaram to be ordinary human beings, and he was trying to measure the activities of the Lord. Due to this pastime, Krishna is known as Ranchora, which means one who has left the battlefield. In India, especially in Gujarat, there are many temples of Krishna known as the temples of Ranchora Chi. Ordinarily, if a king leaves the battlefield without fighting, he is called a coward. But when Krishna enacts this pastime, leaving the battlefield without fighting, he is worshipped by the devotees. A demon always tries to measure the opulence of Krishna, whereas a devotee never tries to measure his strength and opulence, but always surrenders unto him and worships him. By following in the footsteps of pure devotees, we can know that Krishna, the Ranchora Ji, left the battlefield not because he was afraid, but because he had some other purpose. The purpose, as it will be revealed, was to attend to a confidential letter sent by Rukmini, his future first wife. Krishna's leaving the battlefield is a display of one of his six opulences. Krishna is the supreme powerful, the supreme wealthy, the supreme famous, the supreme wise, and the supreme beautiful. Similarly, he is the supreme renouncer. Srimad Bhagavatam clearly states that he left the battlefield in spite of having ample military strength. Even without his militia, he alone could have been sufficient to defeat the army of Jarasandha, and as he had done 17 times before. Therefore, his leaving the battlefield is an example of his supermost opulence, renunciation. After traversing a very long distance, the brothers pretended to become tired. To mitigate their weariness, they climbed up a mountain many miles above the sea level. This mountain was called Pravarshana due to the constant rain, for the peak was always covered with clouds sent by Indra. Jarasandha took it for granted that the two brothers were afraid of his military power and had hidden themselves at the top of the mountain. First he tried to find them, searching for a long time, but when he failed, he decided to trap and kill them by setting fire around the peak. He therefore surrounded the peak with firewood and set it ablaze. As the fire spread more and more, Krishna and Balaram jumped from the top of the mountain down to the ground, a distance of 88 miles. Thus, while the peak was burning up, Krishna and Balaram escaped unseen by Jarasandha or his men. Jarasandha concluded that the two brothers had burned to ashes and that there was no need of further fighting. Thinking himself successful in his efforts, he left the city of Mathura and returned to his home in the kingdom of Magadha. Gradually, Krishna and Balaram reached the city of Dwarka, which was surrounded by the sea. Following this, Sri Balaram married Revati, daughter of the king of Raivata, ruler of Anartha province. This is explained in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. After the marriage of Baladev, Krishna married Rukmini. Rukmini was the daughter of King Bhishmaka, ruler of the province known as Vidarbha. Just as Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, Rukmini is the supreme goddess of fortune, Mahalakshmi. According to the authority of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the expansion of Krishna and that of Srimati Radharani are simultaneous. Krishna expands himself in the various Vishnu Tattva forms, and Srimati Radharani expands herself in the various Shakti Tattva forms by her internal potency as multiforms of the Goddess of Fortune. According to Vedic convention, there are eight kinds of marriage. In the first-class marriage system, the parents of the bride and bridegroom arrange the marriage date. Then, in royal style, the bridegroom goes to the house of the bride. In the presence of brahmanas, priests, and relatives, the bride is given in charity to the bridegroom. Besides this, there are other systems, such as the Gandharva and the Rakshasa marriage. Krishna married Rukmini according to the Rakshasa system, kidnapping her in the presence of his many rivals, like Shishupal, Jarasandha, and Shalva. While Rukmini was being given in charity to Shishupal, Krishna snatched her from the marriage arena exactly as Garuda snatched a pot of nectar from the demigods. Rukmini, the only daughter of King Bhishmaka, was exquisitely beautiful. She was known as Ruchira Nana, which means one who has a beautiful face expanded like a lotus flower. Devotees of Krishna are always eager to hear about the transcendental activities of the Lord. His activities of fighting, kidnapping, and running away from the battlefield are all transcendental. Being on the absolute platform, and devotees take a transcendental interest in hearing of them. The pure devotee does not make the distinction that some activities of the Lord should be heard and others avoided. There is, however, a class of so-called devotees known as Prakriti Sahajiyas, who are very much interested in hearing about Krishna's Rasalila with the gopis, but not about his fighting with his enemies. They do not know that his bellicose activities and his friendly activities with the gopis are equally transcendental. Being on the absolute platform, all the transcendental pastimes of Krishna described in Srimad Bhagavatam are relished by pure devotees through submissive oral reception. They do not reject even a drop. The story of Krishna's marriage with Rukmini is described as follows. The king of Vidarbha, Maharaj Bhishmaka, was very qualified and devoted. He had five sons and only one daughter. The first son was known as Rukmi, the second Rukmarata, the third Rukmabahu, the fourth Rukmakesha, and the fifth Rukmamali. The brothers had one young sister, Rukmini. She was beautiful and chaste and was meant to be married to Lord Krishna. Many saintly persons and sages like Narada Muni used to visit the palace of King Bhishmaka. Naturally, Rukmini had a chance to talk with them, and in this way, she obtained information about Krishna. She was informed about the six opulences of Krishna, and simply by hearing about him, she desired to surrender herself to his lotus feet and become his wife. Krishna also heard of Rukmini. She was a reservoir of all transcendental qualities: intelligence, auspicious physical features, liberal-mindedness, exquisite beauty, and righteous behavior. Krishna therefore decided that she was fit to be his wife. All the relatives of King Bhishmaka decided that Rukmini should be given in marriage to Krishna. But her elder brother Rukmi, despite the desire of the others, arranged for her marriage with Shishupal, a determined enemy of Krishna. When the black-eyed, beautiful Rukmini heard of the settlement, she immediately became very morose. However, being a king's daughter, she understood political diplomacy and decided that there was no use in simply being morose. Some steps should be taken immediately. After some deliberation, she decided to send a message to Krishna, and so that she might not be deceived, she selected a qualified brahmana as her messenger. Such a qualified brahmana is always truthful and is a devotee of Vishnu. Without delay, she sent the brahmana to Dwarka. Reaching the gate of Dwarka, the brahmana informed the doorkeeper of his arrival, and the doorkeeper led him to the place where Krishna was sitting on a golden throne. Since the brahmana had the opportunity to become Rukmini's messenger, he was fortunate enough to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the original cause of all causes. A brahmana is the spiritual teacher of all the social divisions. Lord Sri Krishna, in order to teach everyone the Vedic etiquette of how to respect the brahmana, immediately got up and offered him his throne. When the Brahmana was seated on the golden throne, Lord Shri Krishna began to worship him exactly as the demigods worship Krishna. In this way, he taught everyone that worshipping his devotee is more valuable than worshipping him. In due time, the Brahmana took his bath, accepted his meals, and lay down to rest on a bedstead completely bedecked with soft silk. As he was resting, Lord Shri Krishna silently approached and, with great respect, put the Brahmana's legs on his lap and began to massage them. In this way, Krishna appeared before the Brahmana and said, "My dear Brahmana, I hope that you are executing the religious principles without difficulty and that your mind is always peaceful." End of quote. Different classes of people in the social system are engaged in various professions, and when one inquires as to the well-being of a particular person, he should do so on the basis of that person's occupation. Therefore, when one inquires as to the welfare of a Brahmana, the question should be worded according to his condition of life, so as not to disturb him. A peaceful mind is the basis for becoming truthful, clean, equipoised, self-controlled, and tolerant. Thus, by attaining knowledge and knowing its practical application in life, one becomes convinced about the absolute truth. The Brahmana knew Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and still he accepted the respectful service of the Lord on the grounds of Vedic social convention. Lord Shri Krishna was playing just like a human being because he belonged to the Kshatriya division of the social system and was a young boy. It was his duty to show respect to such a Brahmana. Lord Krishna continued, quote, "O best of all the Brahmanas, you should always remain satisfied, for if a Brahmana is always satisfied, he will not deviate from his prescribed duties. And simply by sticking to one's prescribed duties, everyone, especially a Brahmana, can attain the highest perfection of all desires. Even if a person is as opulent as the king of heaven, Indra, if he is not satisfied, he inevitably has to transmigrate from one planet to another. Such a person can never be happy under any circumstances. But if one's mind is satisfied, even if he is bereft of all possessions, he can be happy living anywhere." End of quote. This instruction by Krishna to the Brahmana is very significant. The purport is that a true Brahmana should not be disturbed in any situation. In this modern age, Kali Yuga, the so-called Brahmanas have accepted the abominable position of Sudras, or less, and still want to pass as qualified Brahmanas. Actually, a qualified Brahmana always sticks to his own duties and never accepts those of a Sudra or of one less than a Sudra. It is advised in the authorized scriptures that a Brahmana may, under awkward circumstances, accept a profession of a Kshatriya or even a Vaishya, but never is he to accept the profession of a Sudra. Lord Krishna declared that a Brahmana will never be disturbed by any adverse conditions if he scrupulously sticks to his religious principles. In conclusion, Lord Shri Krishna said, "I offer my respectful obeisances to the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas, for the Brahmanas are always self-satisfied, and the Vaishnavas are always engaged in actual welfare activities for human society. They are the best friends of the people in general. They are free from false egoism and are always in a peaceful condition of mind." End of quote. Lord Krishna then desired to know about the rulers in the Brahmana's kingdom. So he inquired whether the citizens of the kingdom were all happy. A king's qualification is judged by the temperament of the people in the kingdom. If they are happy in all respects, it is to be understood that the king is honest and is executing his duties rightly. Krishna said that the king in whose kingdom the citizens are happy is very dear to him. Of course, Krishna could understand that the Brahmana had come with a confidential message. Therefore, he said, "If you have no objection, I give you liberty to speak about your mission." Excuse me. Okay. Thus, being very much satisfied by these transcendental positions with the Lord, the Brahmana narrated the whole story of his mission and coming to see Krishna. He got out the letter Rukmini had written to Krishna and said, These are the words of Princess Rukmini. Quote, "My dear Lord, my dear Krishna, O infallible and most beautiful one, any human being who happens to hear about your transcendental form and pastimes immediately absorbs through his ears your name, fame, and qualities. Thus all his material pangs subside, and he fixes your form in his heart. Through such transcendental love for you, he always sees you within himself, and by this process all his desires are fulfilled. Similarly, I have heard of your transcendental qualities. I may be shameless in expressing myself directly, but you have captivated me and taken my heart. You may doubt my steadiness of character, since how could an unmarried young girl like me approach you without any shame? But my dear Mukunda, you are the supreme lion among human beings, the supreme person among persons. Any girl, though not yet having left her home, or even any woman of the highest chastity would desire to marry you, being captivated by your unprecedented character, knowledge, opulence, and position. I know that you are the husband of the goddess of fortune and are very kind toward your devotees. Therefore, I have decided to become your eternal maidservant. My dear Lord, I dedicate my life and soul unto your lotus feet. I have selected your lordship as my husband, and I therefore request you to accept me as your wife. You are the supreme, powerful, O lotus-eyed one. Now I belong to you. If that which is enjoyable for the lion to eat is taken away by the jackal, it would be a ludicrous affair. Therefore, I request you to immediately take care of me before I am taken away by Shishupal and other princes who like him. My dear Lord, in my previous life, I may have done public welfare work like digging wells and planting trees or pious activities such as performing ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices and serving superiors like the Supreme Master, Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. By these activities, perhaps I have pleased the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. If this be so, then I wish that you, Lord Krishna, the brother of Lord Balaram, please come here and catch hold of my hand so that I should not be touched by Shishupal and his company." End of quote. Rukmini's marriage with Shishupal was already settled. Therefore, she suggested that Krishna kidnap her, so this might be changed. This sort of marriage in which the girl is kidnapped by force is known as Rakshasa and is practiced among Kshatriyas, or men, with an administrative martial spirit. Because her marriage was already arranged to take place the next day, Rukmini suggested that Krishna come there incognito to kidnap her and then fight with Shishupal and his allies like the king of Magadha. Knowing that no one could conquer Krishna, who would certainly emerge victorious, she addressed him as Ajita, the unconquerable Lord. Rukmini told Krishna not to be concerned that the fighting would take place within the palace, and that many of her family members, including other women, might thus be wounded or even killed. As the king of a country thinks of diplomatic ways to achieve his object, Rukmini, being the daughter of a king, was diplomatic in suggesting how this unnecessary and undesirable killing could be avoided. She explained that it was a custom of her family to visit the temple of Goddess Durga, their family deity, before the marriage. In parentheses, it says the Kshatriya kings were mostly staunch Vaishnavas, worshipping Lord Vishnu in either the Radha Krishna or Lakshmi Narayan form. Still, for their material welfare, they used to worship Goddess Durga. They never made the mistake, however, by accepting the demigods as the Supreme Lord on the level of Vishnu Tattva, as do some less intelligent men. End of quote. To avoid the unnecessary killing of her relatives, Rukmini suggested that it would be easier for him to kidnap her while she was either going from the palace to the temple or else returning home. She also explained to Krishna why she was anxious to marry him, even though her marriage was to take place with Shishupal, who was also qualified, being the son of a great king. Rukmini said that she did not think anyone was greater than Krishna, not even Lord Shiva, who is known as Mahadev, the greatest of all demigods. Lord Shiva also seeks the pleasure of Lord Krishna in order to be delivered from his entanglement in the quality of ignorance within the material world. Although Lord Shiva is the greatest of all great souls, Mahatmas, he keeps on his head the purifying water of the Ganges, which emanates from a hole in this material universe made by the toe of Lord Vishnu. Lord Shiva is in charge of the material quality of ignorance, and to keep himself in a transcendental position, he always meditates on Lord Vishnu or Krishna and always tries to purify himself with the water of the Ganges. Therefore, Rukmini knew very well that obtaining the favor of Krishna was not easy, since even Lord Shiva must purify himself for this purpose. Surely, it would be difficult for Rukmini, who was only the daughter of a Kshatriya king. Thus she desired to dedicate her life to observing severe austerities and penances, such as fasting and going without bodily comforts. If it were not possible in this lifetime to gain Krishna's favor by these activities, she was prepared to die from such austerities and to undergo similar difficulties lifetime after lifetime. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that pure devotees of the Lord execute devotional service with great determination. Such determination, as exhibited by Rukmini Devi, is the only price for purchasing Krishna's favor. One should be strongly determined in Krishna consciousness, and that is the way to ultimate success. After relaying Rukmini Devi's statement to Krishna, the Brahmana said, quote, "My dear Krishna, chief of the Yadu dynasty, I have brought this confidential message for you from Rukmini. Now it is placed before you for your consideration. After due deliberation, you may act as you please. But if you want to do something, you must do it immediately. There's not much time left for action." Okay, that's the end of that chapter. So we go on to the next chapter. Krishna kidnaps Rukmini. After hearing Rukmini's statement, Lord Krishna was very much pleased. He immediately shook hands with the Brahmana and said, "My dear Brahmana, I am very glad to hear that Rukmini is eager to marry me, since I am also eager to get her hand. My mind is always absorbed in thoughts of the daughter of Bhishmaka, and sometimes I cannot sleep at night because I am thinking of her. I can understand that the marriage of Rukmini with Shishupal has been arranged by her elder brother in a spirit of animosity toward me, so I am determined to give a good lesson to all these princes. Just as one extracts and uses fire after manipulating ordinary wood, after dealing with these demoniac princes, I shall bring forth Rukmini like fire from their midst." Krishna, upon being informed of the specific date of Rukmini's marriage, was anxious to leave immediately. He asked his driver, Daruka, to harness the horses for his chariot and prepare to go to the kingdom of Vidarbha. After hearing this order, the driver brought Krishna's four special horses. The names and descriptions of these horses are mentioned in the Padma Purana. The first one, Saibhya, was greenish. The second, Sugriva, was grayish like ice. The third, Megapushpa, was the color of a new cloud, and the last, Balahaka, was of ashen color. When the horses were yoked and the chariot was ready to go, Krishna helped the Brahmana up and gave him a seat by his side. Immediately, they started from Dwarka and within one night arrived at the province of Vidarbha. The kingdom of Dwarka is situated in the western part of India, and Vidarbha is situated in the northern part. They are separated by a distance of not less than 1,000 miles, but the horses were so fast that they reached a destination, a town called Kundina, within one night, or at most 12 hours. That means they were going about 80, 90 miles an hour. Can you imagine? It made me think about the roads in India and potholes and everything. It must have been off the ground. Because to hit one of those holes going 80 miles an hour, you fly. So pretty transcendental here that Krishna is going so fast, 85, 90 miles an hour, to reach Rukmini. Okay. King Bhishmaka was not enthusiastic about handing his daughter over to Shishupal, but he was obliged to accept the marriage settlement due to his affectionate attachment for his eldest son, who had negotiated it. As a matter of duty, the king was decorating the city for the marriage ceremony and acting in great earnestness to make it very successful. Water was sprinkled all over the streets, and the city was cleansed very nicely. Since India is situated in the tropical zone, the atmosphere is always dry. Dust always accumulates on the streets and roads, so they must be sprinkled with water at least once a day, and in big cities like Calcutta, twice a day. The roads of Kundina were arrayed with colored flags and festoons, and great gates were constructed at particular crossings. The whole city was decorated very nicely. The beauty of the city was enhanced by the inhabitants, both men and women, who were dressed in fresh, washed clothes and decorated with sandalwood pulp, pearl necklaces and flower garlands. Incense burned everywhere, and fragrances like aguru scented the air. Priests and brahmanas were sumptuously fed, and according to ritualistic ceremony, were given sufficient wealth and cows in charity. In this way, they were engaged in chanting Vedic hymns. The king's daughter, Rukmini, was exquisitely beautiful. She was very clean and had beautiful teeth. The auspicious sacred thread was tied on her wrist. She was given various types of jewelry to wear, and long silken cloth to cover the upper and lower parts of her body. Learned priests gave her protection by chanting mantras from the Samaveda, the Rig Veda and Yajur Veda. Then they chanted mantras from the Atharva Veda and offered oblations in the fire to pacify the influence of the different stars. Mind you, I think it says here somewhere that Rukmini was only 13 or 14 years old at the time. Just gorgeous. King Bhishmaka was experienced in dealing with brahmanas and priests when such ceremonies were held. He specifically honored the brahmanas by giving them large quantities of gold and silver, grain mixed with molasses, and cows decorated with cloth and ornaments. Damaghosh, Shishupal's father, executed all kinds of ritualistic performances to invoke good fortune for his son. Shishupal's father was known as Damaghosh due to his superior ability to cut down unregulated citizens. Dama means curbing down, and Ghosh means famous. So he was famous for controlling the citizens. Damaghosh thought that if Krishna came to disturb the marriage ceremony, he would certainly cut him down with his military power. Therefore, after performing the various auspicious ceremonies, Damaghosh gathered his military divisions. He took many elephants garlanded with golden necklaces and many similarly decorated chariots and horses. It appeared that Damaghosh, along with his son and other companions, was going to Kundina, not exactly to get Shishupal married, but mainly to fight. I was told at one time that in a marriage ceremony such as this, that which we use today as kumkum, in a marriage ceremony you use kumkum, and the lady, her hair is parted, and they put kumkum here. In these days, it was blood. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, because they would have this kind of fight, and that's what happened in those days. Very interesting. When King Bhishmaka learned that Damaghosh and his party were arriving, he left the city to receive them. Outside the city gate were many gardens where guests were welcome to stay. In the Vedic system of marriage, the bride's father receives a large party of the bridegroom and accommodates them in a suitable place for 2 or 3 days until the marriage ceremony is performed. The party led by Damaghosh contained thousands of men, among whom the prominent kings and personalities were Jarasandha, Dantavakra, Vidurath, and Pundaraka. It was an open secret that Rukmini was meant to be married to Krishna, but that her elder brother Rukmi had arranged her marriage to Shishupal. There was also some whispering about a rumor that Rukmini had sent a messenger to Krishna. Therefore, the soldiers suspected that Krishna might cause a disturbance by attempting to kidnap Rukmini. Even though they were not without fear, they were all prepared to give Krishna a good fight to prevent the girl from being taken away. Sri Balaram received the news from Krishna, that Krishna had left for Kundina, accompanied only by a brahmana, and that Sishupal was there with a large number of soldiers. Balaram suspected that they would attack Krishna, and thus, out of great affection for his brother, he took strong military divisions of chariots, infantry, horses, and elephants, and went to the precincts of Kundina. Meanwhile, inside the palace, Rukmini was expecting Krishna to arrive, but neither he nor the brahmana who took the message appeared. She was full of anxiety and began to think how unfortunate she was. Quote, "There is only one night between today and my marriage day, and still neither the brahmana nor Shyamasundar has returned. I cannot ascertain any reason for this." End of quote. Having little hope, she thought that perhaps Krishna had found reason to become dissatisfied and had rejected her fair proposal. As a result, the brahmana might have become disappointed and not come back. Although she was thinking of various causes for the delay, she expected them both at any moment. Rukmini further thought that demigods such as Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Goddess Durga might have been displeased. It is generally said that the demigods become angry when not properly worshipped. For instance, when Indra found that the inhabitants of Vrindavan were not worshipping him, Krishna having stopped the Indra Yajna, he became angry and wanted to chastise them. Thus, Rukmini thought that since she did not worship Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma very much, they might have become angry and tried to frustrate her plan. Similarly, she thought that Goddess Durga, the wife of Lord Shiva, might have taken the side of her husband. Lord Shiva is known as Rudra, and his wife is known as Rudrani. Rudrani and Rudra refer to those who are accustomed to putting others in distress to cry forever. Rukmini was thinking of Goddess Durga as Girija, the daughter of the Himalayan mountains. The Himalayan mountains are very cold and hard, and she thought of Goddess Durga as hard-hearted and cold. In her anxiety to see Krishna, Rukmini, who was after all still a child, thought this way about the different demigods. The gopis worshipped Goddess Katyayani to get Krishna as her husband. Similarly, Rukmini was thinking of the various types of demigods, not for material benefit, but in respect to Krishna. Praying to the demigods to achieve the favor of Krishna is not irregular, and Rukmini was fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. Even though she pacified herself by thinking that the time for Govinda to arrive had not yet expired, Rukmini felt that she was hoping against hope. Not expressing her mind to anyone, she simply shed tears, unobserved by others. And when her tears became more forceful, she closed her eyes in helplessness. While Rukmini was in such deep thought, auspicious symptoms appeared in different parts of her body. Trembling began to occur in her left eyelid, arm, and thigh. When trembling occurs in these parts of the body, it is an auspicious sign indicating that something lucrative can be expected. Just then, Rukmini, full of anxiety, saw the brahmana messenger. Krishna, being the supersoul of all living beings, could understand Rukmini's anxiety. Therefore, he sent the brahmana inside the palace to let her know that he had arrived. When Rukmini saw the brahmana, she could understand the auspicious trembling of her body and immediately became elated. She smiled and inquired whether Krishna had already come. The brahmana replied that the son of the Yadu dynasty, Sri Krishna, had arrived. He further encouraged her by saying that Krishna had promised to carry her away without fail. Rukmini was so elated by the brahmana's message that she wanted to give him in charity everything she possessed. However, finding nothing suitable for presentation, she simply offered him her respectful obeisances. The significance of offering respectful obeisances to a superior is that the one offering obeisances is obliged to be to the respected person. In other words, Rukmini implied that she would remain ever grateful to the brahmana. Anyone who gets the favor of the goddess of fortune, as did this brahmana, is without a doubt always happy in material opulence. When King Bhishmaka heard that Krishna and Balaram had come, she invited them to see the marriage ceremony of his daughter. ceremony of his daughter. Immediately he arranged to receive them, along with their soldiers, in a suitable garden house. As was the Vedic custom, the king offered Krishna and Balaram honey and fresh washed garments. He was hospitable not only to Krishna, Balaram, and kings such as Jarasandha, but also to many other kings and princes, according to their personal strength, age, and material possessions. Out of curiosity and eagerness, the people of Kundina assembled before Krishna and Balaram to drink the nectar of their beauty. With tearful eyes, they offered Krishna and Balaram their silent respects. They were very much pleased, considering Lord Krishna the suitable match for Rukmini. They were so eager to unite Krishna and Rukmini that they prayed to the personality of Godhead, quote, "Our dear Lord, if we have performed any pious activities with which you are satisfied, kindly be merciful upon us and accept the hand of Rukmini," end of quote. It appears that Rukmini was a very popular princess, and all the citizens, out of intense love for her, prayed for her best fortune. In the meantime, Rukmini, being very nicely dressed and protected by bodyguards, came out of the palace to visit the temple of Ambika, goddess of Durga. Deity worship in the temple has been in existence since the beginning of Vedic culture. There is a class of men described in the Bhagavad Gita as Veda Vada Rata. They believe only in the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, but not in temple worship. Such foolish people may here take note that although this marriage of Krishna and Rukmini took place more than 5,000 years ago, there were arrangements for temple worship. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, "Yanti deva vrata devan." The worshippers of the demigods attained the abodes of the demigods. There were many people who worshipped the demigods and many who directly worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The system of demigod worship was directed mainly to Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Ganesh, the sun god, and Goddess Durga. Lord Shiva and Goddess Durga were worshipped even by the royal families. Other minor demigods were worshipped by silly, lower-class people. As far as the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas are concerned, they simply worship Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita, the worship of demigods is condemned but not forbidden. It is clearly stated that less intelligent men worship the demigods for material benefit. On the other hand, even though Rukmini was the goddess of fortune, she went to the temple of Goddess Durga because the family deity was worshipped there. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that as Rukmini proceeded toward the temple of Goddess Durga, within her heart she always thought of the lotus feet of Krishna. Therefore, when Rukmini went to the temple, it was not with the intention of any ordinary person who goes to beg for material benefits. Her only goal was Krishna. As Rukmini proceeded toward the temple, she was silent and grave. Her mother and girlfriends were by her side, and the wife of a Brahmana was in the center, surrounding her with royal bodyguards. The custom of a would-be bride's going to the temple of a demigod is still practiced in India. As the procession continued, various musical sounds were heard. Conch shells, drums, such as panavas, and bugles of different sizes, such as turiyas and berries, were combined to make a sound which was not only auspicious, but very sweet to hear. Thousands of wives of respectful brahmanas were present, all dressed very nicely with suitable ornaments. They presented Rukmini with flower garlands, sandalwood pulp, and a variety of colorful garments to assist her in worshipping Lord Shiva and Goddess Durga. Some of these ladies were very old and knew perfectly well how to chant prayers to Goddess Durga and Lord Shiva. So, followed by Rukmini and others, they led these prayers before the deity. Okay, not too much further. Rukmini offered her prayers to the deity by saying, "My dear Goddess Durga, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you as well as to your children. Goddess Durga has four famous children, two daughters, the goddess of fortune Lakshmi and the goddess of learning Sarasvati, and two sons, Lord Ganesh and Lord Kartikeya. They are all considered demigods and goddesses. Such Goddess Durga Since goddess Durga is always worshipped with her famous children, Rukmini specifically offered her respectful obeisances to the deity in that way. However, her prayers were special. Ordinary people pray to goddess Durga for material wealth, fame, profit, strength, and so on. Rukmini, however, desired to have Krishna for her husband and therefore prayed that the deity be pleased with her and bless her with that benediction. Since she desired only Krishna, her worship of the demigods is not condemned. While Rukmini was praying, she presented a variety of items before the deity, chief of which were water, different kinds of flames, incense, garments, garlands, and various foods prepared with ghee, such as puris and kachoris. She also offered fruits, sugarcane, betel nuts, and spices. With great devotion, Rukmini offered them to the deity according to the regulative principles directed by the old Brahmana ladies. After this ritualistic ceremony, the ladies offered the remnants of the food to Rukmini as prasadam, which she accepted with great respect. Then Rukmini offered her obeisances to the ladies and to goddess Durga. After the business of deity worship was finished, Rukmini caught hold of the hand of one of her girlfriends in her own hand, which was decorated with a jeweled ring, and left the temple in the company of the others. All the princes and visitors who came to Kundina for the marriage had assembled outside the temple to see Rukmini. The princess were especially eager to see her because they all actually thought that they would have Rukmini as their wife. Struck with wonder upon seeing Rukmini, they thought she was especially manufactured by the Creator to bewilder all the great chivalrous princes. Her body was well constructed, the middle portion being thin. Her high hips were adorned with a jeweled locket. She had pink lips, and the beauty of her face was enhanced by her slightly scattered hair and by different kinds of earrings. The bodily luster and beauty of Rukmini appeared as if painted by an artist, perfectly presenting beauty following the descriptions of great poets. Rukmini's breasts are described as being somewhat high, indicating that she was just a youth not more than 13 or 14 years old. Her beauty was specifically intended to attract the attention of Krishna. Although the princess gazed upon her beautiful features, she was not at all proud. Her eyes moved restlessly, and when she smiled very simply, like an innocent girl, her teeth appeared just like jasmine buds. Expecting Krishna to take her away at any moment, she proceeded slowly toward her home. Her legs moved just like a full-grown swan, and her ankle belts tinkled mildly. The chivalrous princess assembled there were so overwhelmed by Rukmini's beauty that they became almost unconscious and fell from their horses and elephants. Full of lust, they hopelessly desired Rukmini's hand, comparing their own beauty to hers. Srimati Rukmini, however, was not interested in any of them. In her heart, she was simply expecting Krishna to come and carry her away. As she was adjusting the ornaments on a finger of her left hand, she happened to look upon the princess and suddenly saw that Krishna was present amongst them. Although Rukmini had never before seen Krishna, she was always thinking of him. Thus, she had no difficulty recognizing him amongst the princely order. Krishna, unconcerned with the other princesses, immediately took the opportunity to place Rukmini on his chariot, marked by a flag bearing an image of Garuda. He then proceeded slowly without fear, taking Rukmini away exactly as a lion takes a deer from the midst of jackals. Meanwhile, Balaram appeared on the scene with the soldiers of the Yadu dynasty. Jarasandha, who had many times experienced defeat by Krishna, roared, "How is this? Krishna is taking Rukmini away from us without opposition. What is the use of our being chivalrous fighters with arrows? My dear princess, just look. We are losing our reputation. He is just like a jackal taking booty from a lion." Srimati Rukmini Devi Ki Jaya. So the rest is pretty self-explanatory. Krishna captures Rukmini, takes her away, the princes all try to come and take her away from Krishna, but he defeats all of them. Balaram comes with his army. He helps get rid of Jarasandha's army. And in the end, Krishna marries Rukmini. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hari bol. Thank you.